Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Need expert advice on your family's health? Speak to us today at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Senator Tom Clonan said an interesting thing after the care referendum last week. He said that maybe we need to have a conversation in Ireland about ableism. And look, obviously we all like to think that we're good people and all that, but I do think a lot of us have been maybe questioning ourselves a bit this past week about our attitudes. So I'm joined now by Fiona Weldon, who is Capacity Officer at Independent Living Movement Ireland. Welcome, Fiona.
Hi, Connor. Hi, Brendan. How are you today?
Good, thanks. And Fiona, I feel you're going to point out maybe a few inconvenient truths to us. But look, maybe we need to have a few awkward conversations here. We might all learn to do a bit better around things.
Yeah.
So, come here. Can I ask you first? Did you find the conversation around the care referendum insulting? Like, was there a sense that the family carer conversation was kind of talking over the heads of disabled people?
I feel that we were, I suppose it was conflicting, because the care as a term is a very loaded and perceptual concept of caring for and caring, you know. So like, obviously I care for my family and I care for my kids and my, you know, but like, caring as supportive caring is different than, so if you need care per se, you know, because you're older or because you are a disabled person, it's more support than care, Brendan.
Support is
Okay. So we don't need care because we have caring people in our lives.
Okay. So like, there's lesson one. Let's start calling it support.
Yeah, so
okay.
We need support, but in support of personal assistance. So, like, for example, I have two PAs. I also have a husband and a dog and kids and whatever. But my PAs provide the support I need to work, you know, to manage my home, you know, to go out and about, you know. So my family are not my supporters. They love me, they care for me, but they're not doing care on me. So they're in charge.
And does that notion of the family caring for people, does that reinforce that notion of you as some kind of burden then to your loved ones?
Well,
yes?
And the concept of what we're talking about, you know, care now, you know, what's in the Constitution and what's in Public Care Ireland. And, you know, like, we all want our best for our kids and our loved ones. But like, the people that I work with seriously don't want their family members to support them, you know, or older people don't want their family members to care for them or care to do on them. They want to be supported. And that should be, you know, the state's responsibility. But the state has like, never kind of said outwardly that they are responsible for providing the support that we need to live good lives. So we don't have, we have a resource-based system, you know, so no one has the right to the support that they need to live good lives, and per se.
Okay. So will you explain maybe briefly the philosophy of the independent living movement? Because I get the impression that you guys, you're not nice, agreeable, grateful kind of disabled people,
no,
are you?
No, we're not nice, grateful. No, we're not. We believe that we have the same rights as everybody else. And just because I'm use a wheelchair and I have an impairment doesn't mean I should not live the same life as you might live. And so our non-disabled counterparts, like if we use ableism, are kind of more important than non-disabled people. So we assume that it's a bad thing to be a disabled person. And it's not a bad thing. We're just lying to people.
Okay, so you're not less.
I'm definitely not less. Yeah. And there's lots of me that are definitely not less than.
And is that how people maybe tend to see it sometimes without meaning to, like that they somehow
think it's unconscious bias.
Yeah, okay.
I think it's unconscious. I think, like, we are trained from a very early age to notice difference. And then we become afraid of it. And then, like, as we grow up, we tend to kind of shy away from it. And then we start judging it if we don't see people that are different. And, like, I think everybody is different. But, like, if we're physically or intellectually different, you know, there are judgments. So they are. So we're devalued.
Okay.
And we're allowing that because our system devalues us because they don't give us the right supports that we need to live good lives.
So maybe explain to me a little bit about the day-to-day ableism that we might all be guilty of in various ways. The kind of, I suppose, the microaggressions, would you call them? The language we use, maybe how we are in our interactions with disabled people?
The language is really interesting. So, like, I would say I'm a disabled woman. So I would. So I'm not a person with a disability. And because I believe impairment is separate from disability. My impairment, I manage it, I have to manage it, it won't go away. But my disability only comes into play when I experience that I can't get into a building or the door doesn't open or I go into a hotel and I try to navigate the bathroom, you know, and it's supposed to be accessible and it's not. Or like if I go shopping and the person serving me is asking my PA what I want as opposed to say, okay, I'm here. She's okay. Not shopping, I'm shopping, you know. So like it's rife in society.
Like, so you have in yourself an impairment and society turns that into a disability?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kamir, should we assume, I'm guessing that we should assume you don't want help. Some people, they're trying to do the right thing and they wonder, should I help that person? In general, would it be a safe assumption? No, don't try and help anyone.
I remember when I was, I'd say it was 18 or 19 years of age, and I went on the bus with my mum to Dublin. So I did. And I was getting off the bus, Brendan, and this nice man came up to me. He got off the bus and he said, do you want help? And I told him to.
Okay.
Well, he was being nice, you know, but it was my internalized ableism. So like, I felt that I wanted to be as normal as I could, you know, so I was trying to do everything for myself, by myself. And that's what internalized ableism does to disabled people. You know, that we think we're less able. We think we're dependent. We assume we can't learn. We assume we can't work. We assume that we have to use this multi-billion industry that keeps warehousing disabled people into special schools, into special residential services, into day centres. So we've a huge amount of disabled people that want to work but can't get work.
Okay, you know, now, there's a lot to unpick there. Talk to me first about this notion of wanting to be, you say, normal. Is that the bar, like, when you're growing up and everything?
I think we have a narrow view of what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. And I think it's about our unconscious bias as well. You know, so, like, we need to be white. We need to be male. We need to be middle class. You know, we need to be good-looking. You know, we need to be well-dressed, you know. And if you don't, like, fit into that norm, you know, you're treated differently. So women, black people, you know, non-Irish people, you know, travelling people. They don't fit into that normal category. So the world is built around this notion of normality, of being white, middle class, money, and being independent, you know, and our perception of independency, you know, being independent is kind of crazy because we're all interdependent.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are. And just because I need support to do things doesn't mean I'm less able. You know, it just means I need support and I have that support. And I use it quite effectively. So I do. Yeah. I'm working for the last long time in the sector of disability. And I've been a long-time activist and around supporting people to live the best lives that they can live, and like kind of helping them to understand it's not their fault, you know, that, you know, society treats them less than or others them.
Do a lot of disabled people think it's their fault, yeah?
Yes. Yes, so it's like their impairment is their disability, you know, and it's not. And there's so much research out there that says it's man-made structures that disable us, that disempowers us, that, and like it's the man-made structures around how we provide services, and they're always managed by non-disabled people, not involving us in how they deliver their services, you know, and our government continues, and this really frustrates me. So, like, it's not working.
Okay, go back to, you mentioned special schools. Not a fan, no?
Not a fan, no. Not a fan. Now, I didn't go to a special school, but I work with lots of people that have.
Yeah.
And, like, they've had good experiences, you know. But, like, we're in, like, 2024, and we're building more special schools, and we have universal design education, and we've inclusive education. So why aren't we using that knowledge to support kids to be in ordinary schools? You know, like, we may, like, obviously when I was young, I didn't have support. I wasn't allowed to go play with the other kids in case I fell, so I had to stay in the classroom. But, like, you know, like, if you can't see it, you can't be it. You know, kids need to see other kids. You know, there are 13.5% of us in the world. So there is, you know, all of us go to school.
So it's like 1 in 7, 1 in 8, yeah.
It's a lot of people, isn't it?
Yeah.
So all we're teaching kids is that some kids need to go to special school and they're different. And some people go to mainstream school and they're normal.
Yeah. I suppose, though, like that, you know,
kids,
parents are trying to do their best as well.
I've totally,
and they're thinking,
totally,
you know, there
agree.
Can be a thing that, like, well, you know, will they have more friends if they're in a special? And then the options, as you know, for special classes within mainstream are not really there, are they?
No, they're not. And they're really not. And, like, I think our education system, like, is broken anyway for many young people. But, like, yeah, like, there are lots and lots of studies to say, that kids that do go to special school are bullied more than those kids that go to mainstream school. And that's just an example. You know? So just because they're going to special school doesn't mean they're going to make friends. They're going to have meaningful relationships. And some kids do thrive, you know, in special schools. And, like, maybe there is a cohort of young people that need that sort of support. But I don't think it should be through the life course.
Okay, so you're saying that education should be truly inclusive, is what you're saying?
I think so, and appreciate and acknowledge difference as well, you know, because if we're going to teach, well, like Mary is different than Joe, and Joan is different than whatever, and that's okay, but we need to, like, help kids to understand that difference is okay, you know, like it shouldn't be that I'm better than you because I can walk, or I'm better than you that I can read, or I'm better than you that I can run faster, you know. And young people now, I don't know if I have young people now, it's kind of a scary world to be a young person now because there's so many other things involved as well. We have technology. We have the phones, mobile phones. Mm. We have Twitter and Facebook, and it's
very different world to what you.
Thank God, I don't have young kids. Yeah.
Camille, I'm interested in what other kind of unconscious biases we might have now. Is sexuality a big taboo kind of thing?
I don't know. I think it's a taboo in Ireland anyway.
Fair enough.
You know, like, I know, like, so I have an impairment, so I had a perception, you know, I had internalized the belief that I could never get pregnant, for example. So at the age of 21, I had sex. Sorry, Dad, Mum. And I had my
first. This is the first you're hearing
baby.
Of it.
So I didn't. I nearly had canaries, you know.
Yeah.
But, like, even that belief that I was different and I didn't think I could, you know.
So you yourself had the.
I bought into the whole. You know, internalized stuff that I couldn't do this and I couldn't do that and I couldn't do the other and whatever.
You see, it's amazing. You're saying, like, whatever about the rest of us. Like, society does a right number on you, doesn't it? Like, on your own idea
of
yourself.
I do a right number on them as well.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Camille, okay, I'm not saying this, but was there an issue then when you had the baby? Was there kind of a thing of who's going to look after the baby?
Had a brilliant doctor.
Yeah.
Okay, so, like, he knew me very well. So, obviously, I learned to parent my son, Aaron, very well. I suppose there was concerns, but I suppose I kind of said, well, go away, leave me alone, really. So my sort of, I kind of grew into who I am now, you know, learned along the way. And I had good people around me, but I'm very stubborn, Brendan, so...
Okay.
So if my mother said black, I said white.
Right. Yeah.
And if she said up, I went down. I had really good friends in school. I did all the things that they did. And I went to discos, I kissed boys, I went out with boys, I did all that. And then I suppose when I finished my secondary school and everything kind of fell apart because, like, I didn't know where I fit anymore. And I ended up going to a special service. I lasted a year. And then I started to learn about who I was and learned about what I wanted. I started work. went back to college and studied until I was studied for 20 odd years. And now I work for a really, really good organization that shares the same values as I share.
Yeah, and actually, your founder, Martin Nocton,
mm-hmm.
A book has just come out recently. Mm-hmm. Is it called Never Know Your Place?
Yeah.
I think if people want a bit of an education, now he died a few years back, but this book has come out posthumously about him and his life and his journey, and it's a great education for anyone.
Yeah.
So look, if you could give us all a few helpful hints here now I think. Probably a lot of the unconscious biases we have or whatever. If you could get people to change one or two things today in their attitudes or how they...
Don't assume.
Okay.
Don't assume that I cannot. Don't assume that I cannot have a cocktail or a glass of wine or go out for a meal or... go to third level. Don't assume that I can live where I want to live. Don't assume that just because I have an impairment, that it limits me. Because if with the right supports, and the right supports are not my family caring for me, it's about having a personal assistant to support me to live a really good life. And then maybe I will and I can do it. So if you don't see it, you can't be it.
Okay. Don't assume. Don't assume. That's one lesson we could all take away. Fiona Weldon, it's been amazing talking to you. Thank you very much. That was an education and a half. Fiona Weldon of the Independent Living Movement Ireland. Thank you. We'll take a break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.